Ever since the 2000 presidential election came down to a dead heat in Florida, Democrats have been trying to figure out what kind of national party they want to be. Syndicated columnist Mark Shields joins us here in the studio. Mark, glad you're here.
Good morning.
So, before you joined our esteemed profession, you worked for Democratic candidates for the presidency and for many other offices. How would you describe the process that the Democrats are going through right now?
I think it's predictable, and yet it's exceptional in the sense predictable after every election defeat. The losing party, regardless of which it is, Democrats or Republicans, goes through a soul searching, which boils down to just two sides. One side says we lost because we didn't stand for our core values, our traditional beliefs, and people just were not energized. The other side says we lost because we weren't enough like the guys who won. Republicans used to do this between moderates and conservatives. Democrats do it between true believer liberals or populists or and the more moderate Democrats. So that's where the Democrats are right now. They're where the Republicans were after they lost in 1992, after they lost in 1996, and as some Democrats would still argue, after they lost in 2000. And the argument continues because right. Do we really need to do anything, say Democrats, because we've won, in quotes, three elections in a row.
But then at some point, doesn't this kind of thing become dangerous, this sort of internal debate, food fight, candidates representing one position or the other and everybody shooting at them?
Sure, it does. But you have to understand this. Democrats, in 1948, the Democrats had a walkout over civil rights. Strom Thurmond, the late and lamented Strom Thurmond, led a walkout of the Dixiecrats. And the Democrats won that year. A party that was split. So Democrats are not as leery of intra-party fights, but they do end, Linda, when people go to the ballot box. Somebody wins and somebody loses. There are only three tickets out of Iowa. If you finish first or second, you finished in first class, coach, and maybe standby. But nobody's ever finished below third in Iowa and won a nomination.
Well, the hot guy right this minute is Howard Dean. He talks about being from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, and he seems to have got online fundraising cracked in a way that most candidates haven't been able to do. How do you think he's doing?
Well, I think he's doing exceptionally well. I mean, according to the Dean folks, they have 83,000 contributors, which actually is more even than President George W. Bush, who's raised fundraising to a new and dark art. The mistake that his opponents make is this. They say, well, the reason he's doing this is because he's good on the Internet, this new esoteric device for reaching voters. But just as Republicans explained Franklin Roosevelt's dominance, that he was good on radio, or even Democrats who lost twice to Ronald Reagan said, oh, he's good on television. If we could just get somebody who's good on television. The key is not the Internet. The key is the message and the messenger. Howard Dean, to his credit in the eyes of many Democrats, unlike the congressional leadership, stood up and opposed what many of the members of the Democratic Party did, the invasion of Iraq and the war there. Then he looked brave to these people. Now, in fact, given the subsequent events, he looks almost brave and prophetic, and if anything, has strengthened him.
What about the possibility, which was raised in a couple of places this week, that Al Gore might decide that he was a little hasty in saying that he didn't want to run and that he might be thinking about it?
I was frankly surprised that Al Gore did not run in 2004 based upon the experience of 2000. Every morning he gets up, looks in the mirror and said, you know, I got more votes than anybody who's ever run for president, except Ronald Reagan. There's something wrong. It's unfair. I'm going to run. If he were to enter at this point, it would give an advantage. There is no front runner in this race. You have to understand this about the Democrats and why they're different from the Republicans. The Republican Party, there is a hierarchy. It's a little bit, as my conservative colleague Robert Novak once said, the Republican Party is a little bit like the Rotary Club. You go through the chairs. If you were sergeant at arms this year, you're going to be vice president next year, and then you're president. And in the Democrats, it's kind of whoever wanders in the back of the room. Carter, is that your name? Come on up here. McGovern, I haven't met you before. Dukakis, is that Greek for Mondale? Come on up here. I mean, and obviously if Al Gore were to enter it, he would become the catalyst for both attention and criticism from those who've been out there slogging through the living rooms of Iowa and the Kiwanis clubs of New Hampshire, as well as making endless fundraising calls.
What about the big issue? Things do seem to be sort of changing a bit, maybe about to turn the corner in Iraq, maybe the economy is about to turn the corner. What is the big issue for the Democrats?
whoever the Democratic nominee is, has to first pass the threshold test on national security. And George W. Bush, in most voters' minds, has met that test, especially after September 11th when his numbers went through the ceiling. He has come back to earth. The president's re-elect score, that is, when you vote for George W. Bush in 2004, is now to the mid-40s. And the Democrats, would you vote for a Democrat instead, is that now up in the mid-30s. Now, that means this, that the people who are undecided, the 17% who say that they're open one way or the other, they're available.
Mark Shields, thanks very much.
Thank you, Linda.
Syndicated columnist Mark Shields, he joined us here in the studio.